Hey there, ladies and gents with big curious brains. I'm your host, Justin, and welcome to Don't Know Squat About, my journey to learn everything. Running away with the circus is like one of those things you threaten to do as a kid, but you know that as of the past 40 years, or unless you live in Florida, isn't probably a viable option. This topic comes in via Twitter from @JulianHiggins, who asks, I've always wondered what it would be like to run away with the circus. What does that life look like? Great question, Julian. Good thing I know just the person to answer that.
Hey, I'm Olga Kay, and I've had many careers in the past. I started as a teenager in a circus, Russian circus, and then I came to America with Ringling Brothers, then I became a YouTube personality, and then I leveraged that into building my own brand, which is Mooshwalks.
So I'm here because I don't know squat about the circus. I think I maybe went like once in my entire life.
And when it seems was like,
that? I must have been like 10. I think the circus came to Wisconsin. And I have like just a very vague memory of like an elephant or something like that and eating like peanuts. And thus ends my knowledge. But it always seems like running away to the circus or joining the circus, it seems like an imaginary thing that people just kind of say as like a whatever. And that's why I'm so fascinated with your story of coming from Russia and that being kind of like a conduit. So set up the stage for us, you know, growing up in Russia, kind of what was your upbringing and how did you get attracted to the circus life?
Yeah, so actually, I actually ran away with the circus for a better life. I grew up in a tiny village in Russia. It was in Crimea, so it was Ukraine, Russia, Ukraine, now it's Russia again. The village was tiny, the conditions were really poor, and my aunt was working in the circus already. So as a little girl, all I had around me is chickens and cows, and I had to pull out weeds out of my backyard all the time. So my dream as a little girl was to become a circus performer. And I would always tell my mom that I want to run away with the circus, and she would say, well, once you're 18, then you can go. And I was 5 at that time, so that seemed like a century, more than a century.
Oh, absolutely.
It seemed like 100 years to me. And then I think I was 14, and the conditions became so tough in the village that my aunt offered that we should pack up and just join her on the road and just clean up after the animals. And it was the biggest exciting day of my life.
So it's like you're the most thrilled person to know you're going to be cleaning up animal poop.
Yep.
You're like, this is for me.
I'm like, yeah, just open that door. I just want to go. So my dream kind of became a reality 4 years before my mom allowed me to go. So we joined the circus. We left everything behind and thought maybe we're going to come back after a couple of years after we save up some money. And we just never came back to my village. I haven't been there in probably 20 something years now. So we joined the circus, and I remember every single morning I wanted to wake up and see what kind of people I can meet, because in a Russian circus we would travel once a month, and Russian circus are very different than American circus. In America it's most of the pop-ups and there are tents and they just set up and they leave. In Russia we actually have buildings dedicated to circuses.
Wow, so it's like going to the mall.
Exactly. And the buildings would be so beautiful because they would be nice and round. They all look like domes. So people in that town would know that it's a circus. And every month they will have a new program that will come in, and it's different acts. And you never know who you're going to be working with. So you work with the same people for a month. You get to know them. You become friends with some. And then you are sent to a different city, but not necessarily with the same group of people. So it's always new people that you're meeting.
Oh, okay. So each circus, it's not like a local theater where it's the same group of people at each building. It's more of like they're set almost more like a sports team or something like that, that's touring around playing in different, you know, arenas and things like that. But it's a mix. So would you typically, like, do you know how many of these different buildings there were around Russia? Was there like hundreds, or was there like a dozen?
Probably hundreds. I would say every major city, and Russia is huge, would have a circus. And then on the side, circuses would make money with pop stars, where pop stars, instead of selling out stadiums, they would sell out circuses. And then they get to perform in a round arena, and people can see them from every angle, so it's not just the stage. So we would have our shows, and then a couple of times a month, we'll see all these big pop stars coming in, and we're like, yes, free show for the circus performers. So it's pretty fantastic. And within the circus, so circus would have a hotel attached to it. So all of the performers would live in that hotel every time they would move into a new city. And usually a school would be really close to circus. So every month I would change my schools.
Oh my gosh.
So that was really tough because different cities have different programs. So I would study some things twice and some things not at all. And I would just travel so much. And I just become friends with people and then I'll just have to move to another city. But it was so awesome because we would rehearse in the daytime. We would perform in the evening. And then we would all go to our hotels and we all meet up in the kitchen. Because everyone is cooking dinner, and all of the young kids would meet up in one of the rooms, and we would just hang out, play video games, and you know, discover things.
You had video games? It's just Tetris. That's what I imagined. Yeah. Only Tetris is allowed.
True, but I remember I think I had a PlayStation 2. So really janky old PlayStation, and I would play Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, it's a great game.
It's an awesome game.
What a great visual. It yeah. sounds to me like a really great like kind of summer camp experience.
Exactly. And the best part was, so we never knew who we're going to be working with. So we'd meet people, become friends, and then we go to a different city. We meet new people, and then we go to a third city, and one of our old friends would show up as well. And we're like, yes, reunited.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. I loved it. I was in a Russian circus for about like 2 years, traveling everywhere.
And do you remember over the course of the 2 years, I guess every month it was a whole new experience, a whole new place?
Yep. There's a system in a Russian circus where every artist is stationed on paperwork, is stationed in Moscow. We have this building where everyone, they have the records of everyone who is performing in a Russian circus. And they would actually make the decisions who goes where. So, and eventually, pretty much we're like, I'll paint the picture. So we would be in Moscow and they say, okay, next month you're going to St. Petersburg for 3 months. And then you say, okay, and then you sign the contract and you go. And I think they also tell you how much you're going to be making. And it's pretty much, I think everyone was getting paid the same everywhere we went. It all depended on what kind of act you had. And then for some reason, if you went to perform in Siberia or any of those places...
Doesn't sound great.
I think your salary would triple.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't even that bad. So I don't know why it would triple. But I guess because nobody really wants to go to Siberia, even in Russia, which is funny because my family lives there. So I go there all the time.
Like, this is great. I get paid triple to see my family.
So exactly. So it was kind of nice to, you know, make more money. And then once in a while, we would have the talent scouts that come into Moscow Circus. Working in the Moscow Circus was actually very prestigious because you had more opportunities. So you would have people from Ringling Brothers that would come and visit, and they would only pick out the acts from the Moscow Circus and or any other foreign contracts that you can secure. And I think going to – so many of our performers went to Dubai.
Whoa.
I think you got paid like six times more than
even
in
better
Russia.
Than Siberia.
No, exactly. And it was just so luxurious. And I remember a talent scout came to Moscow Circus. I was 16. And they said, would you like to go to Ringling Brothers? And it's going to be in America. And so 16, I ran up to my friends. I was like, we're going to America. And they're like, yeah, but do you go to Latin America or like Northern America? Like, where are you going? Or do you go to the States? And I'm like, I don't know, but I think it's the States. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's good then. And it was just one of those things where I was leaving for 2 years and I was going to come back. And I just never came back.
So they weren't scouting you as a poop scooper at that point. How long did the poop shoveling go on for? And when did you transition into what
Actually, yeah. So I was poop scooping the whole time, even in America.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they actually came and they discovered my aunt's act. And at that time, I was rehearsing my personal juggling act. So I was doing both. I was rehearsing and performing whenever I could, and then poop scooping on the side.
Okay.
And so, you know, I had to hustle working for my name. And so they were scouting out animal acts, and they found my aunt, and she was training geese at that time, and we were scooping a lot of poop from geese. I did some research, and I think geese poop 12 times an hour, a minute, an hour, something insane.
12 times a minute sounds excessive.
Yeah, it's like excessive. Maybe it's an hour.
They'd be like machine guns.
It was a lot of poop. I remember we had to clean a couple of times a day. So I had my juggling act at that time. So coming to America, I was still poops cleaning and juggling. I'm actually, and nobody has seen this, I was training to be not just the juggler, but a juggler on unsupported ladder, which is a 6 feet tall ladder that you climb up and balance. And while you're standing on top of it, you juggle.
That seems like when you're rehearsing that, what is like, what's the way you start? How do you start that routine? Because it seems like just pain and after pain after pain if you fall.
Exactly. So the first thing you learn is how to fall. So you start on the first step. And just to explain, it's a ladder that you would lean against the wall. So it's not a three...
Yeah, it's not like it's got, it doesn't like stand on its own.
It doesn't stand. So you definitely have to move it side to side and balance and climb up. So you go, you jump on one step and then you balance and you find your balance and then you jump on the second and then you go.
It's just one straight up ladder?
You're correct.
You don't have it resting against anything
nope.
And you're climbing up? Oh my God.
Yeah, so you'll have to Google it and see what it means. But if you Google unsupported ladder trick or juggling act or something, you'll see what it is. But you have to balance all the way up and the ladder is 6 feet tall, and then once you get to the top, you put your legs, one leg at front of the step and one leg behind.
Okay.
So, and then you just stand on top, and your hands are free at this point because you're not holding onto a ladder. So now you just, your feet go side to side, and then you can stand it. So I think the hardest part is to go up and coming down. It's kind of like taking off on the, in the plane. Like the most dangerous is like takeoff and landing. So once you're up top, you're pretty safe, and you can be there forever until you get tired. And then to make it more complicated, because, you know, we wanted to create something unique with our act, we would juggle on top. Our hands were free, so we would juggle, balance things.
I can't imagine. So climbing up the ladder, because it's just a straight up ladder, like it seems like you'd have to be kind of leaning, the ladder would have to be like leaning a little forward,
yep.
And you'd be leaning a little back to keep it in the center. That just seems
exactly
nuts
so.
To me.
The ladder is leaning forward, and the lower you are, the lower the ladder, leaning more forward. And once you go to the top, then it's just perfectly vertical.
Do you remember how many weeks or months it took to finally ascend to the top of the ladder?
It took me a while to get a hang of what it is. What does it mean to balance a ladder? But once I was able to get to a third step, which I think was within a month probably, to be comfortable. And then it was all about overcoming the
fear.
Fear. Like fever.
Overcoming the fee of doing...
the fear. And then we would also learn how to fall from each step. Because at the different level of the ladder, there's different things that you have to do to, you know, not hurt yourself. So I think it took me a couple of months. And then after a couple of months, I got more comfortable. And then I would start with one object in my hands and then two and three and four and then so on. The hardest part was to balance a ladder and look up at the same time.
Oh, my God.
Because you lose the balance, right? So the balance happens when you focus on something in front of you. Even when you juggle, you kind of look through the pattern so you don't really have to follow the objects. But once you look up, you just lose this sense of where you are and where your feet are at. So that was the hardest part. So after about a year, I was rehearsing this trick where I was balancing a long stick with the ball on top of it. And I was just so terrified. And finally, when I finished the rehearsal for that trick, to come down the ladder, you have to move one of your legs up and over, and then you are on one side of the ladder instead of at front and the back, if that makes sense.
Oh, so you're putting both your legs on one side.
Yeah, so...
You're not straddling it anymore.
Exactly. And then you move the leg back. So when I was lifting my leg, my shoe got stuck in one of the steps. And I remember it just got, like, it came off my heel and it just got stuck. And I couldn't lift up my leg high enough to separate my foot in the step.
Were you by yourself?
I was rehearsing. I was in a rehearsal. There's lots of people around. And then our assistants were there as well. And I remember I couldn't get my foot out. So I started janking it up and trying to do whatever it takes. And as I was doing that, I started falling because at this point I can't balance anymore. Yeah. So I started falling. And as I was falling, I could have probably jumped off, only my weight pulled back so much that the ladder just slid underneath me. Mm. And I just, in like this tremendous speed, I just slammed on the floor with my head. And to be on the ladder, so you can't be on any surface, you have to be on the wooden surface. So we had this wooden rings that we would put our ladders on and then we would balance. So I just slid down and instead of hitting the circus ring, which is usually pretty soft, I just hit this wood.
Yeah.
I think I was out. I don't know how long I was out, but I was diagnosed with 40-minute amnesia because once I opened my eyes, I was asking everyone three questions. What happened? Who saw me? And what am I wearing? So those are the three things that were so important to
them. Yes. What you were wearing.
And I remember it was so important that they would tell me who saw me fall because I guess I was embarrassed that that happened. And I guess I've been asking the same questions for about 40 minutes.
Wow. I mean, that just seems at a certain point when you're falling, you're beyond any kind of way of adjusting to fix that. So is that still memory? Is that, do you have the memory now of falling, or is it just kind of, you know what you were told happened?
I just know what I've been told. The only thing I remember from that hour is when I first opened my eyes after the concussion, I remember feeling that my eyes were super gigantic and about to pop out of my skull.
Wow,
like I remember that feeling that was just like, oh, something is wrong. I think my eyes are going to pop out.
It's the strangest. I mean, it hasn't happened to me. I mean, I passed out like giving blood before. It's just kind of moment where you're just like, it's like you're going to sleep and then you're in this just like dark kind of pool of unconsciousness. And when you come back, it's the strangest feeling.
Yeah.
It's that reboot switch. And especially a situation like you were on a ladder and you fell off. And then, gosh.
It was really bizarre. But I feel like, I mean, there's no proof of this, but I feel like ever since I fell down, I think it might have did something to my brain that made me a little different. In more of a creative way. I feel like I became more daring, and even though I was like terrified of the ladder, like I was so happy when I finally finished that career and I never had to see a ladder before again. So every time I would perform since that moment, I was always terrified. Each show was just a huge deal, and I would go and perform, and I would be, you know, my hands would be sweating, and I'm a juggler, so it's like important that your hands are not sweaty, so it's not, you know, nothing is falling out of your hands because it's just your hands are too wet. And I remember just, you know, doing every show terrified, and then once I finished the performance, I would always say, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like, I actually did well. I want to go out and do it again. And, like, right away.
But then you start the cycle again.
But then you start the cycle again because you calm down and, you know, you have 2 hours between the shows. And then 2 hours later, I was like, I don't want to go. So it was, as much as I loved being a circus performer, it was, I developed a huge stage fright during that, you know, my teenage years.
So the concussion, it almost seems like it would be like a near-death experience kind of thing. Where it's like, a lot of times when people go through that type of experience, they come back with, you know, maybe more optimism, or they're not afraid of death anymore, or things like that. I find it interesting that that experience changed you creatively, but almost really shifted your path from doing things like juggling, especially in a lot. Was regular juggling okay, or was it just the ladder juggling?
Yeah, regular juggling was fine. I would say I've always had a stage fright. Like live performances, maybe now I would feel different, but live performances were like a task for me, and it's a hard one.
Well, I mean, I can imagine, and have that kind of fear in the back of your mind.
Yeah,
and it's not good.
Yeah, and once I was not performing on the ladder, it was such a relief because I could move and dance, and it was just so much more fun than being stuck. Because with the ladder, you have, you know, you're stuck there, and then you have to be so perfect and precise, which is great. It gave me like this discipline of being perfect and precise. And develop more of a control freak problems in me.
Right.
But, yeah.
So growing up in the circus, and you must have been surrounded by a lot of, I imagine, strange characters and strange people.
Actually, I would say in a Russian circus, it wasn't as strange as it was in America.
That's kind of what I was hoping. I imagine a Russian circus is more of like, it's like a job and people are very organized and regimented. And I feel like the circus in America attracts, I imagine, weirdos.
Yep. No, I think you're absolutely right. So in a Russian circus, I had so much respect for circus performers. I mean, I still do, but people have so much respect for them. And Russian circus performers are kind of pop stars in the country. Mm-hmm. Like, they're always on TV. They're getting interviewed. So they're respected as the best ballerinas out there or, you know, pop stars. They're just really out there. They're part of the biggest TV shows as guest judges and so on. So when I came to America and I actually saw that it was so different and it was just more of a hobby here and it's not really respected and people just kind of like, oh, you're in the circus? Ha, ha, ha. You must be a clown. So it was just that kind of attitude. And I remember thinking, I don't know if I want to do this my whole life, because it always come down for me personally, if I'm 35 or 40 years old, am I proud that I'm doing this? And I remember I was 17 at that time, and I remember thinking, like, I don't want to be a 40-year-old doing this because I want people to respect me.
Can a circus career last that long? Can you do it for, you know, till you retire?
Absolutely. So in a Russian circus in particular, there's dynasties. There's generation after generation. And you usually start off with some physical act like aerial or acrobatics or something like that. And then as you age, you continue to do it, but you also graduate into bigger acts like training elephants or tigers, and then your kids can do the acts that you did when you were younger.
Unless the tiger eats you.
Yeah.
And then maybe then it's still another way of passing it on.
Yeah, right. So, and that has happened to some people. So yeah, people stay in the circus forever and they're born into the circus careers. By the time they're 3 or 4, they're already doing some acts. Or I remember there was a girl who was 7 years old and she was training dogs and the dogs were doing all these amazing tricks.
Wow.
And then she became an aerial artist and then she probably trains elephants now.
So when you went from the American, from the Russian circus to the American circus, do you remember your first experience?
I remember coming to America. Our city for rehearsals were Sarasota, Florida. And in
the heart of America.
Right? Yep. And in Russia, we have this discipline where we do whatever it takes to get the job done. And I remember we were rehearsing, and this was before I knew that there's union laws and everything. I remember we were rehearsing, and we're in the middle of solving some kind of a problem in the show, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, we have to have lunch in 5 minutes. And all of the Russians on the team, they're like, why? Let's just finish this. And then I remember we broke for lunch, and then coming back from lunch just like takes you a while to bounce back into it. I was like, oh my God, how much time was wasted? We could have finished that and like started with something fresh. I remember being so frustrated. That was like the biggest culture shock. I was like, why would we ever stop for lunch right now? Nobody's even hungry. We've been like snacking all day. But as far as weird characters, so my show in America was very interesting. We didn't have a 3-ring circus. It was 1 ring. And Ringling Brothers were trying to develop something that was very similar to Cirque du Soleil. We had velvety chairs everywhere. It was just this awesome experience. And we had the cast from all over the world. We have people from Morocco and France and Italy, just so China, just almost every single country.
Did everyone speak English? Was that like kind of the common tongue, or were just like some people just like only spoke circus and that was it?
I was the person who only spoke the circus in the beginning. But yeah, we all spoke English, and everyone would have broken English unless they've been in America for a while. And some people like me, small amount, we barely spoke any, and we would just talk in sign language. And I was like, what do you say? So, I mean, I have stories where I came up to one of our electricians, and I was just so proud of my English, and I thought I'll have a conversation. And I remember I sat somewhere, I sat on a wet chair somewhere, and I came up to him to make a joke, and I just turned around, and I said, hey, my asshole is wet. Wow. And I was 17, and the look on his face was just so terrified.
I'm going to jail.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, oh, girl, like, hold on, let me just explain something to you. And I'm like, what's the problem? He's like, well, asshole. So he goes through this explanation that all asshole is inside, and this is just your ass, so you can't be say asshole because that's a little too sexual.
Your
and
pants.
Yeah.
Even then.
And like, who knows, even... right? Like, just didn't talk about it. Like, but, you know, I always push my boundaries. And then...
I bet you can imagine, his, you can see his face in your head, you know, to this day.
I can. I really can. It was just this moment where he had to teach me how to speak English right on the spot, so nobody is confused about anything. Yes. And then I would come up to our chefs and I would request a can of Coke, but I wouldn't know how to say it right, so I'll say a can of cock. And I was just like, this 17-year-old just goes around with profanities. Nothing changed since, but now at least I know the difference. So
there's a lot to learn. Thankfully, yes. That particular electrician was gentle about it. Hello, listener. Hope you're enjoying this episode. As you may have noticed, this podcast is collaborative. So please throw some topics into the ring, just like Julian did, by tweeting them to me at JustinSuperstar with the hashtag DKSA. And now, back to Olga's life in the circus.
So I go from Russia, where we change our cast of the program every month, and now I'm with the same group of people for 2 years. The only thing I would say is that by the time the 2 years are over, everyone has slept with everyone, and there is like lots of and there's lots of, you know, bed blood in certain pockets of the group. So that would be probably the most exciting the most exciting and weird part about, you know, being in the circus.
So you started when you were 17, and then you finished your run there when you were 19.
19, yeah.
That seems like a really formative age for any person. Typically you'd be going from like high school to college.
Yeah.
How did those years really affect your life and affect who you are now just as like a person?
I remember I wasn't dating at all. So I remember that. So that was a little weird, I guess. But at the same time, like, there was no one to date. There were some young French boys that I, you know, always would throw me in the pool. So we just never connected that way. It was the first time in my life where I was really making money. And I remember my days, you know, cleaning up the poop and then going to rehearsals and then performing. And every time we would have our circus, it would be next to a mall. So that part of my teenage years, I remember vividly, where I had the money, so I would just go to the mall every single day. And I would watch movies and just spend money on the most expensive skincare. And I was 17. So that part I remember.
Where do you keep all your stuff?
Oh my gosh, we all lived in trailers too. So it was really, actually this circus had something different. So in a three-ring circus in Ringling Brothers, everyone lives on the train and the rooms are tiny and you have to have the least amount of clothing with you, whatever you need. We had a different situation. So every single performer, unless you had animals, would live in these glorious 5-star hotels for a whole month. So it was really great for them. I never had this opportunity because we had the animals, so we have to be on the property. So they would give us like a really nice trailer. But a really nice trailer means it's a trailer at the end of the day. And it was four of us, my uncle, my aunt, and my cousin and I. So it was four of us in this trailer, and the backside of the trailer was filled with geese.
And geese poop.
And they poop, but they also scream. And we had about 30. God. We had like 30 geese. So they would sleep through the night unless somebody would shake the trailer. And then they would start screaming.
It sounds terrible. I know. 5-star hotel or just like trailer with screaming, pooping geese.
Yep. And so that was my life. But the cool part...
I can't imagine that no one wanted to date you.
Yeah, exactly. There's come nowhere, out back to the exactly. There's geese. Nowhere to date me, right? And the highlight that we would always be in the middle of happening spots. Like when we came to Los Angeles, I was 17 and we stayed in the middle of Century City. And I could walk to Beverly Hills. I was like, this is awesome. I live in the trailer, but I'm like in the middle of these cool things.
When you were walking around, did you ever talk to people and say, you know, like, oh, where are you from? And you're like, I'm not really, do you ever have to answer that question?
I did. And it is a weird, because we had a stationary address where we could not, like, nobody could ever send us mail. So it has to go to Virginia somewhere, and then Virginia would send it to us. So it will take forever. But yeah, so I could never say where I was from, even in Russia. Like, we didn't have a home. We were just traveling. I was like, well, this month I'm here. Next month, I don't know yet, but we'll find out. So yeah, that was really weird. But one of my highlights at the end of our 2-year tour, we ended up in New York, and our circus was built in the middle of Bryant Park.
Oh, it's so cool.
It was so awesome. And there used to be, or maybe still there, a fountain. And so my stage, I would juggle on top of that fountain, and it was all decorated under the circus. So we were in the middle of Bryant Park for a month and a half.
What time of year was this?
So that was right before Christmas.
Oh, man.
It was November, December, and it was just so beautiful. And every time I would finish, I mean, it was crazy. I remember like walking down Times Square every single day, just spending money on the random things.
Skincare.
Yeah.
And then is that around then when you made the decision to stay in America?
So yes, and at that time, it was actually a really heartbreaking moment because all of us signed a contract for another year, but we were not told where we're going to go next. So it was either somewhere else in America, and at this point, we've traveled to all the major cities. We're in Los Angeles and Houston and Dallas and Austin, and we've just been in every single city. And so we're either going to continue traveling in America or we're going to go to Japan, was so cool.
Yeah.
And that's what usually happens after 2 years with Cirque du Soleil. They go, they start in Canada, then they go to America, and then they go to all these other countries. And it was just so exciting. We thought we're going to be with the circus forever, just traveling the world. And I think 2 weeks before our contract started, and we were on a 3-week break after New York, we've been told that the show is shutting down.
Oh.
And everyone just has to figure out where they're going to go next. And we're so late on what the next... We were so... Because you usually sign contracts 6 months, 8 months in advance, so you know what you're doing in the future. And Ringling Brothers were so nice to all of the performers. They ended up paying us for another 6 months, and we didn't have to work. So we kind of had to figure out what the next step was, and that's when I got introduced. So maybe I was happy in Ringling Brothers, but then I got introduced to family circuses in America, and that was like the real nightmare of my life, where everyone was doing at least 3 or 4 different acts. And then on the side, you had to sell popcorn or cotton candy. And like
family circuses?
Yeah. So there's like family. So in America, you do have family dynasties that have been in the circus for who knows how many generations. And they usually have their own circus company that either travels across America. And it's really 2-day pop-up circuses. And And of course, they don't have as much money as big corporations. So everyone is just being jibbed from every direction. Mm. And you travel every 3 days. You show up and you help build the tent.
Oh my God.
And then you have maybe half a day to build a tent. And then you do the show. And then you're exhausted after 2 or 3 days. And you have to take everything apart. And then you have to travel and then set up. I mean, it's just nonstop. And sometimes I remember going to Wisconsin, I think, in the middle of winter. I was like, oh, back to Siberia, here we are.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was just really put a bad taste in my mouth, because at that point I really didn't feel like a performer anymore. I was just slave driving through the whole, you know, my time within those circuses.
Yeah, it feels like it's not, you're not in a career, you always want to feel like you're moving up the ladder.
Exactly. And unless you work with the big companies, which you are a handful in America, then you're just kind of surviving, I guess. And then I think my last circus before I finally said, okay, and I'm not doing circuses anymore, was this family circus in Florida. And it was set up in the middle of this swap meet market thing. Oh,
it's not quite and Bryant Park in Christmas.
Not at all. And I remember it was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I remember there was this janky mobile home that was on the property, and one of the dancers was living there. And I said, well, can I come in and live with you? Because I didn't want to be in a trailer anymore. At least this feels more like home. And so I moved in, and she had these two parrots that lived inside of the house. And it was the circus owners that didn't want to have the birds in their house anymore, so they just put it into this janky house. And I remember those poor birds were screaming, and I could not sleep, but it was just better than the trailer at that point.
Wow. And that seems like a rock bottom sort of moment.
It was. But I was still really young, so it just felt normal, I guess.
You're used to the geese screaming. Yeah, surprised it didn't relax you. No, exactly. The dulcet tones of
Yeah.
So I assume geese scream.
Oh my gosh. Well, parrots are actually more terrible, but they're more sporadic. You know, they would be quiet half a day and then they just go into this crazy outbursts of screaming. I remember I was performing 2 or 3 acts in that circus, like my act, the juggling, and then I've learned how to become an aerial artist overnight. So I had that act, and then I remember the owners came up to me and they said, hey, one of our dancers is sick, so today you're going to work with an elephant. I'm like, what? I don't know what I'm doing with the elephant. He's like, it's going to be easy. You're just going to come up. You're going to put your hands into elephant's face, and there's going to be loops there, and you're just going to grab on, and the elephant just going to spin you around for like a minute. And I was like,
cool.
It actually sounded like super cool. I was like, yeah, well, let's try it. And we literally 40 minutes before the show, we just tried it, and it worked, and I was terrified. I was like, okay, here it goes. Like, they told me if I don't hold on tight, the elephant was trained that as soon as you put your hands in, they start spinning. So it kind of looks very cool. You come up to an elephant, all of a sudden you're flying, and your whole body gets off the ground, and the elephant just spins you around. And I remember I was like, okay, I just have to grab on at least with one hand so I don't like go flying into the audience. So moments like this, I was just doing so much of that, and then I had to walk the owner's horses after their her act, and it was just
popcorn.
Yeah, it was just so much. And hey, I like to work hard, but this was just this was just too much.
Do you remember like the animals? Obviously, it's kind of like a contentious point with circuses. But do you remember sensing if the animals seemed like they were treated well, or was there a sadness to them? You know.
So everyone is asking me that question. When I was with Ringling Brothers, on purpose, we didn't have many animals. So we only had our geese. And we treated them well. And then we had horses. We didn't have elephants. And the horses were trained by this gracious woman. She was never mean to them. I've never seen her be mean to her animals. But she did have electric fence around her rehearsal ring, I guess. But that was more so horses don't run away and start roaming.
Protect the audience.
Yeah. And then when I was in this family circuses, oh gosh, I was so busy running around, I didn't even pay attention, I guess.
So no, you didn't see anything bad.
I didn't see anything bad, no.
Looking back at your time in the circus, is there like one, obviously you're happy you moved on from it or whatever, but is there kind of like one shining moment you just wish you could warp back to for like a couple hours? Do you have was there a highlight of your experience? You're like, that was the pinnacle.
You know, I actually, it would only happen maybe once every 8 months, but I do have a dream, this reoccurring dream, that Ringling Brothers decided to bring that particular show back, and we actually get to travel. And I do have happy memories about it, because we had just beautiful costumes, and the show was so great, and people loved it. So I have these moments where I was like, oh, they're coming back, and I get to be part of it again, so that's great. So actually, being in Ringling Brothers was actually my highlight in America. I think that what really damaged me is all the Family Circus after that. But yeah, so I have those dreams, and I really wish that I enjoyed my time in the Russian circus a little more. It just became a routine, and I kind of, you know, that was just, that's what we did. But I wish I've explored more and just really took in the culture that came with the Russian circus, because that was actually really fun.
You heard it here first, folks. If you want to run away to the circus, run away to the Russian one. It's better. Thanks to Olga for teaching me about this topic. You can currently find her on all the social medias at Olga K. That's Olga, K-A-Y. In our next episode, we get rough and tumble and learn about stunts.
Yeah, I mean, it's different with a real fight like, say, for example, you watch a boxing match. There's 15, 20 cameras, and you also have the ring announcers. So-and-so's legs are getting tired. So they fill in a lot of the narratives that the audience needs to know.
This episode's secret word is blunderbuss, an action or way of doing something regarded as lacking in subtlety and precision. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.